So my name is John Beck, and I co-direct Our Daily Work, Our Daily Lives, and it's great to see you all here today. I want to make a few announcements, and then I'm going to introduce my friend Maria, who will introduce everyone else, and I think is the... this is really a crowded month. Actually, it's always a crowded month for us, but we were going to have four brown bags this month. We actually, one of them got canceled. Dylan Miner, who was doing his work on the General Motors strike of 1937, that's going to get delayed now to the fall. For a good reason, Dylan actually got an invitation to do a one-man show in Norway. He's an artist. So it was us or Norway, us or Norway. What can I say? But just to tell you everything else that's coming up, I'll pass these around. We have an exhibit that's going into the main gallery downstairs. It opens a week from this Sunday, and it'll be open through May. It's called On Equal Terms, and it's a installation, mixed media installation, by an artist, blogger, poet, and journeyman electrician, Susan Eisenberg. And Susan is a fascinating woman. She's going to be doing a poetry reading this coming Wednesday at Creole Gallery as part of her time here, because she's going to be doing the installation along with the rest of the museum staff, which is kind of fun. But I'll pass that around. That has all the information. And then it actually kind of recreates that. But let me just tell you that this tells you that then that following Monday, she's doing a brown bag in our series, which is also on the postcard, but feel free to hand those out. Then we're going back to the library. We always try to do the musical ones at the library. So John McCutcheon, for any of you who know folk, John McCutcheon is, he never met an instrument he couldn't play. An unbelievable hammer dulcimer player. Singer-songwriter, but John has spent a good amount of his life working in the South on the side of social justice, so he's doing a brown bag for us on February 17th called Organizing Hearts and Culture and Community Organizing Hearts and Minds, so feel free to take one of those and pass it on. The following week, we're going back a century to the work of race, African-American and African-Indian farmers, farm laborers, and indentured servants in the Old Northwest. So we're even going back further than a century. So, and Jennifer Stinson's coming in from Saginaw Valley State University to talk about that. And for inquiring minds who want to know, here's the rest of the schedule if you don't have one. And if you need one to put on your office refrigerator, take two. Okay? So those are coming around. Now, I've been looking forward to this one for some time, okay? Because long ago, it's not working? Oh, there we go. Oh, you're hearing me, not it. Well, that would be a problem. Okay. Well, maybe it's working, maybe it's not working. Do I sound like the sound of God now? The voice of God. Okay. Maria Quinlan-Leiby and I have been friends for a long time, and I kept on asking about various things, and she said, you know what might be good in your series sometime? I said, what's that? She said, we've got this tradition, we've got this party, we have this kind of version of the Capitol steps in its own way, and other things going on at the Michigan Historical Center. And as any of you who have been longtime attenders know, workers' culture, Our Daily Work, Our Daily Lives, looks at workers' culture broadly defined. And there's nothing that speaks of that more than a workplace holiday tradition, because it's often the place we tell ourselves in each other's stories. It's the way that we present ourselves to each other and to the world. And it's often when we make fun of our bosses, when we make fun of other situations. So when Maria told me more about it, it sounded like this had been properly crystallized and made perfect at the Michigan Historical Center, at least according to Maria. But today we're hearing about the centerpieces in the People's Party, creating a workplace holiday tradition. So please welcome Maria Quinlan-Leiby and the rest of the group from the center that she'll be introducing.
pretty judicious about sharing this for the recording. So.
Okay.
Check. Mic check. Check. Check.
It's like we're going together. Look at that.
Right, Ton.
There we go.
I always feel that I should start at MSU with something sort of academic. I actually do have some folklore training in my background, but I have to admit, when I took folklore research methods at Cooperstown, I made it a point to find a farmstead that I could study as a historical project, much more than a folklore project. however, John is right. We were talking about workplace culture one day, and I realized that our holiday buffet perfectly fit the model. I want to start by giving credit to somebody who's not here today. That's Barbara Mead, former assistant state archaeologist, because it's her ability to organize anything that really took this from something people wanted to do to something that now people feel we have to do it. Life, you know, the holiday season isn't complete without it. The story starts in the 1980s when there was still quite a large number of people on staff who'd been in college or grad school in the 1960s and had participated in various sorts of protests and marches and whatnot. It began when we were the History Division.
Department of State.
And we had offices all over town. The people in the Mutual Building in downtown Lansing got together for a little potluck lunch. Barb thinks maybe it was 8 people. And she says, I'm quoting from something she wrote for us, it was so much fun. We did it again and again. We got a dopey little tree, which we still have, and we started doing Secret Santa. Every year, more people came until finally, our last year in the Mutual Building, we had an all-staff party in the basement, which means it was in the museum, with Archives, Museum, and everyone else. It was so cramped, no one could move, but we had a fabulous time. So we move into this grand new building between Allegan and Kalamazoo Streets in Lansing. And the word trickles down from the top that we're not going to do this year. They had decided there wasn't enough room, it would be too disruptive. It was just too much to go to that trouble. Quoting again, people were stunned. Spontaneously, as if by magic, the People's Revolutionary Christmas Party Committee rose from the masses. We met secretly and organized the entire thing over one lunch hour. The potluck lunch became a buffet. This was when the Let Them Eat Ham logo appeared, which seems to have disappeared over the years. When they had everything organized, they told the director and said, you and the other managers can come if you want to, but we're having a party no matter what. Most of them came. It's still a staff event. It's organized over lunch hours. music is rehearsed over lunch hours, which means that sometimes there are last-minute glitches, but usually it all goes very smoothly. The cooking has always been done on site. We are now up to 2 turkeys and a ham, cooking in various parts of the building so that everybody gets to smell it. We have printed menus. It's pretty elaborate, and we've had to move around as construction has taken away different venues. But it's still very, it just sort of comes out of the woodwork late every fall. Well, this thing started just as a lunch. And as more and more people came, there was an effort to try and provide at least a little bit of entertainment. So there were various contests. There was a bad poetry contest. There was a imaginary historical markers contest, the winner of which is with us. Although he swears he can't find his text. And there were also trivia contests. But I think one of the problems was participation. I mean, if you write historical markers as a job, or exhibit labels, or National Register nominations, if you're not feeling inspired, it's the last thing you want to do when you're getting ready for a party. We also started having door prizes, and these quickly went from a few things like table decorations that got raffled off to dork prizes, D-O-R-K. And they multiplied. Once people saw what you could do with the odd junk that accumulated in your life, all sorts of things started appearing. And funky sunglasses. Richard, I remember you with some really weird sunglasses one year. Yeah. And lately there have been those horrible pooping animals. The other thing that was always a part of, it has always been, continues to be a part of this holiday event, is helping other people. We've always either adopted a Salvation Army family or contributed to the food bank or something like that. So what about the centerpieces? Well, in this effort to provide entertainment, a few people appeared who said they were willing to sing Christmas carols. That's great. It's better than music on the boombox. And then, you know, it just happened. People started writing new lyrics to some of the songs. Steve Ostrander, Dean Anderson, and Laura Ashley, too, are three of the biggest providers of lyrics these days. And I have to say, they all do a great job. And that's how they got to be the centerpieces.
Well, yeah. Because we're warped.
Yeah, well,
that was the main attraction.
Yeah. If you are singing, or if you're a turkey chef, as I am, you get to go to the head of the line, which is always nice. So, without further ado, I'm going to call. Oh, sorry. Yes, this is the most important prop. It started out as a rubber glove filled with plaster, and rubber gloves being what they are, it deteriorated over time and really started looking pretty scuzzy. And Richard, over here to my right, is the museum artist. And he not only draws and paints, but does all sorts of other things. He took a class in molds and casting and all of that. He's currently working on some poison ivy for a Girl Scout exhibit. But this is a cast of his hand. And I think it's going to hold up a lot better than the rubber glove did. I'm going to introduce our singers. There are a couple of people who couldn't come today, but we have pretty good representation, I think. First, we have archivist Helen Taylor, exhibit designer Susan Cooper.
Capella Meister, I'm the person who makes sure I send out the emails.
Cracks the whip, actually. Collections historian Scott Peters, artist Rich Gear, and in his HAL 2001 t-shirt, Eric Perkins, who works in both collections and education. And they will introduce their own selections.
Steve actually has written probably 90% of the songs, if not, yeah. Everybody else has written, Dean and Laura, yeah. They started out being somewhat anonymous, and over the years now we write down who's, it's gone from just scribbled notes on papers to now I have file folders, it's organized, and it's much more different. I don't know who Steve, but... In 98, we started singing just Christmas carols, and then we started rapidly thinking it was more fun and being warped and demented. So in 2005, we came up with this. Actually, Martha McFarlane Faze, who's with the State Historic Preservation Office, came up with this wonderful introduction to it. In this litigious age, we felt that this year we should add a disclaimer before proceeding with our performance, which is also true today. There's nothing like the threat of legal action to put us in the holiday spirit. Believe me, it's not that we don't trust you. We just don't trust ourselves. So here it is, the centerpiece's disclaimer.
This performance is provided without any representations or warranties as to its quality or content. The centerpieces make no representation or warranty that the information provided in this performance is accurate, complete, or up to date, or that this performance is free from defects.
The content of this performance is the product of multiple demented minds who would prefer to remain anonymous, but can't because we all know them. The resemblance of characters mentioned in this performance to persons, real or fictional, is purely circumstantial.
The centerpieces will not be liable for loss or damage resulting from the observance or participation in this performance, such as losing one's mind, moving oneself to tears, dying of boredom, or laughing until it hurts. Nor are the centerpieces liable for the inability to comprehend this performance to the fullest extent permitted by law.
There will be no repercussions for Michigan Historical Center staff who knowingly or in complete ignorance participate in the activities of the centerpieces. After all, we get to be the first in the buffet line.
And finally, the views, contents, proceedings expressed herein do not necessarily reflect those of the state of Michigan.
Our first song is called Once Barbie's Dream, and it reflects again on the startup of the whole event. And so once again, Barb Mead's Dream.
One starlit night, Barb Mead in bed was sleeping. It was a night after dealing with some jerks. One by one, her dreams emerged a dream. The thoughts of
budget cuts are a recurring theme. That last piece was actually written in 2010. Barb was retiring, and so we wanted to honor her. Yeah, wrong word. Whatever. I always get those mixed up. Budget cuts is a recurring theme as in state government. We always seem to be facing those. And there we have it, our props.
This 2005.
Back to 2005. Okay, oops, forgot to bring that prop. Okay. That is one of those we don't have identified.
Anonymous.
It's anonymous. 2005, is that Dean? Dean, write that down on the thing I sent you because that's some of those where they're guilty. See? Told you, didn't know. They went from being anonymous to now I would like have a record. So now we'll have a record for that one. Yeah, this is true. In 2001, by 2001, we got really fancy. And we did, if you're familiar with HAL, History, Arts, and Libraries, but also HAL, the computer from 2001, A Space Odyssey. And so we thought it would be fun, and we wrote an actual whole little play with a narrator. So we're just going to give you a little snippet of that. And it was The Space Odyssey, with the emphasis on the odd. No, we get... Yeah. Yeah, and we had helmets. I just threw it out last year. We had bicycle helmets that we put aluminum foil on with, so that we could. We didn't have Christmas hats that year. Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a faithful trip
that started in this tiny port aboard this tiny ship. The mate was a mighty astronaut, captain brave and sure. Six passengers launched off that day for a three-light-year tour. A three-light-year tour.
Well, Scott, would you be the narrator on this one right here?
Over time, the space travelers had been assigned to their new mothership, Mother Earth, to a new ship called HAL. And as the spaceship was operating, we had a computer and... I actually don't know this story because it's before my time.
It was the same thing. Oh, that's right. You weren't singing with this pipe then. Anyhow, HAL's mission is to... we were the History Bureau, so our mission was to travel through time. Yeah, his name was Dave. And he was very prim and proper. But we actually got him to participate in this one. It was very fun. Oh, we did want an answer. So, pick up some prop decorations. We need to decorate our spaceship. This is Hal, our zippy spaceship. Fa la 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 la. We all love to start and race it. Fa la 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 la. Don we now our space apparel. Fa la 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 la. It's a hoot to do space travel. Fa la 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 la. Well, then we learn once again the budgets have been cut. Dr. Evil has taken over Hal. The ship doesn't have enough fuel to get home for Christmas. Earth informs the crew that no one will get thrown off the ship, however. And Captain Anderson issued directives via his cell phone. He was the director of the department at that time.
The ship got stuck when the budget was cut. Crew was tossed, and all that money they thought we had in forevermore be lost. Forevermore be lost.
There was much more to it, but that's enough. So now we're to 2004, and these are not in any sense of chronological order because we are sort of traveling randomly through time. And Scott, who wrote this one? Oh, Mr. Eric wrote this one, see? Well, we have, if you've been over to the museum building, the Historical Center building, you are familiar possibly with the fact that we have a tree in the middle of the building. It is surrounded by glass, and sometimes it looks better than others. So, yeah. And louder. Oh, higher. Oh, oh, that's fishbowl tree. Oh, fishbowl tree.
How do you grow at all?
You know, that's too high.
That's too high.
We said we were going to do
just
that.
So we have no pitch pipe here.
We agreed we were going to do this because pitch pipe.
We talked yesterday. It was funny. Sometimes Scott gets it right. Sometimes she gets it right. We're never sure what day it's going to be, you know?
Oh. Oh, fishbowl tree. Oh, fishbowl tree. How do you grow?
In 2005, we have the centerpiece's lament. I had sent out an email requesting singers and songwriters for the centerpieces, and our numbers were pretty few that year. And it inspired the song for which those creative, which once we started writing it, it got the creative juices going. And so this one is entitled "The Centerpiece's Lament," and I wrote this one because I was frustrated.
We need you here with us.
Laura Ashley wrote the next piece. This is back when we started keeping track. That would be me keeping track. And this was written in 2007. Laura is doing this very blank face. Crashing Crud.
I remember. You want me to explain it? Okay. Okay. Well, at the Historical Center, the Library and Historical Center, we had a problem with the fact that the roof was leaking and the ceiling tiles were falling and crashing into our office spaces. And it meant that we had a huge reconstruction project going on and we had to vacate our offices. And so Crashing Crud had to do with the crud falling from the ceiling.
Dusty desktops, dirty desktops, crud is filling the air, but employees keep checking their email. Staff are meeting, they're proceeding, trying to get through the day, and above all the vacuums you hear, crashing crud, crashing crud.
Yeah. I don't remember who wrote this one. Steve, did you write this one? If you've ever been around a workplace, sometimes there's a lot of romance going along in the area. And in the spirit of the season we wrote that year, we had a song dedicated to the one thing that makes life worth living, love, and to all the people out there who are in love. There's something special about the Michigan Historical Center that makes certain people go gaga over one another.
We had about three couples get married over time.
Two of whom are sitting in the audience, and one of whom is standing up here. Two who have retired. There's a bunch.
You know Laura and Dean. Lori and Eric and Jim and Sarah Lee. But who's next in line? Oh, will somebody give us a sign?
These people had not introduced themselves yet to everybody else, but a secret was out of them.
It's time for office romance here at the old MHC. It's time to start the gossip, talking about the birds and bees. We wonder when the sparks flew. Did your love move fast or slow? How did you hide your passion? We were always fast to know. Did you hide out in the mine or walk around the block?
And they all still talk to us after that. And they still write songs. You'll notice some of the tunes repeat because there were a limited number of holiday tunes, which have changed. But yeah, 2005 was a popular year. Again, I don't know who wrote this one, but it's probably that person who sits next to my desk, but I'm not sure. It was this tune was written like a week before we did our performance, and it was prompted by an email that we'd gotten in the past week before we did our performance. Be careful of what you save, or maybe not. Remember that if you have too much mail, you can't get any more, which might not be a bad thing. This little ditty went by the working title of Email Deletion, but then, in the true spirit of We're Spontaneous and Weird and Warp, we renamed it in the last hour before the performance to Just Delete All Your Mail.
We just got some news we should hear. Fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Clear your email for the new year. Fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Some of us care more than others. Fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Makes us want to call our mothers. Fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. See the daunting task.
It's, we're going to have to. That's right. And here's another one. Steve did this one in 2009. Oh, you
better not spend, you better not buy, you better be frugal, I'm telling you why. Budget cuts are coming around. Checking them twice, you're going to find out who ordered supplies. Budget cuts are coming around. They know when we've been spending. They know what cuts to make. They know what we are purchasing. Cut your cards for goodness sake. Oh, you better not spend. You better not buy. You better be frugal, I'm telling you why. Budget cuts are coming.
We get these songs, and, you know, sometimes they're complete, sometimes we have to modify them, so this is another Steve song. He loves this one.
Either a state vehicle or a university vehicle of some sort, and in the middle of winter. It's not exactly a fun time, is it?
Especially if you have a big one.
Front-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive? Yeah, ours is rear-wheel.
This one's called Driving in the Winter in the Van.
Skid to the right, it makes me uptight. Driving in the winter
Steve hears me complain a lot, and he's really nice about it. It's for good. I do. This past year, we came over and we only had like 3 songs. And he'd given us a couple other ones that were a little too hard, like one to, what was it?
Oh, Shattered at the Tavern. At the Tavern, yeah.
We couldn't sing that.
No, the real problem is you're not the Rolling Stones.
And there was another one we couldn't do. So that left us down to 3 songs. And it was sort of like, well, are we just going to like bring out old ones, which is what we've just done here today. But it's like, we always want to do new ones. So I go back over across the room and I said, Steve, they won't sing. I need a new one and I need it now. And what did you do?
I sat down and I wrote one.
I had it 5 minutes later. He's my buddy.
Before the end of practice, yeah.
Practice is my bow.
This one's all about the museum had to start charging admission this year and for the first time. And so that's kind of the context for what this one's called.
And it's not a Christmas song. We are broadening our horizons. Yeah. Big break. Yeah.
Fail. We say fail. Hey, right now, where everybody go. Hey, right now, or everybody go home. Work all day, see the school bus come. Hey, right now, or everybody go home. Smile at the kiddies till the day is done. Hey, right now, or everybody go home. Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally up the numbers. Hey, right now, or everybody go home. Come, Mr. Matsar, don't forget the mamas. Hey, right now, or everybody go home.
We say bail.
Hey, right now, or everybody go home.
Count 16, 17, 18, bunch.
Hey, right now, or everybody go home.
Sit at the table and eat the lunch.
Hey, right now, or everybody go home.
We say bail.
Hey, right now, or everybody go home.
And the fun part, we had discussion about whether to include Matt Zarb's name in there, and he was so funny because it was like at the last minute we threw it in. It was like, we need to put somebody's name in there. I don't know. He might like it. He might not. After the performance was all over, he sat there and he's like, dang, I've been here 10 years, and it's the first time I've gotten it into a song. So people like it. I think. He was smiling. He seemed very happy. Here's another Steve-O one. And, you know, some of us, if you've heard, it's retirements. Oh, you need to grab that one, too. Grab that one. Grab that one, too. Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, this is about retiring, or, as Steve put it, let me go. That concludes the singing portion.
So, do you have any questions that we could try and answer?
Yeah, so first of all, let's give them another big round of applause. Not only to them, but to Maria as well for really setting the stage in terms of this in having the idea in the first place. Let me remind you all to sign in if you haven't signed in, so let those continue to circulate.
Once you get on his email list, you're on.
You wanted that sign, right? Too edgy. I would never do that.
No. It's that fine art, you know, fine line. You don't want to get fired either.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. You've been a little selective about audience.
Yeah.
Oh, very selective. Very selective about.
They can say when it's just us.
Yeah.
That.
We try not to pick on individuals. Remember the song Santa Baby? We did one called Sandra Baby. Our boss, Sandra Clark.
She sat right in front of us.
John Phil Kwiatkowski. So we take the occasional shot when we can. You know?
Okay. Other questions? What happens in the Lake Ontario rooms stay in the Lake Ontario?
That is a good question. The breakup of Hal was rough. The Michigan Historical Center had 6 units within it. One of those went to DMB. 2 of them went to MISHDA. History Magazine went to the Historical Society.
And you guys went to DNR.
Yes. And then we were DNRE, and now we're back to DNR. And but we have maintained the tradition of everybody who works in our building, who are the core history people, still get together at the holidays, and everybody pitches in. The MISHDA folks have been fortunate enough to get a number of new employees who are actually, you know, under 50. and they have all become a part of it now. And it is one of the things that kind of holds us together.
Can I say one thing? This year in particular, for some reason, I mean, we went our separate ways. I guess the first party would have been in 2010 would have been our first party,
no,
right?
2009.
Okay. And so for some reason this year, more than ever, to me, it felt like this really is kind of not a rebellion, but it's like we're holding fast against anything that a governor or anyone can do. I mean, I really felt that personally, that it was like, okay, you can break us up, you can try to ruin everything, but we're all going to stay together and we're going to carry on this tradition and we're going to write songs that are subversive and have fun. We're going to have fun in spite of you.
Occupy the Christmas party. Other questions or comments that folks have?
I just want to say it was delightful. I love your humor.
Well, thanks.
It's fun.
I want to say thanks for being a good audience. You guys really appreciate that. Claps in all the right places, even if we stung up. You guys did great.
Having no prior knowledge or context, it's harder because we do target it for who we work with. Yeah. Yeah. So we appreciate your time today.
Okay, Bill.
I think,
gentlemen. I would say as a former administrator retired, that administration should actually, in the background, encourage this sort of thing as a way of dealing with people's problems and hopes, and dashed hopes during very troubled times.
It wouldn't work, though, if the boss told you to do it. We wouldn't do it. We wouldn't do it then.
It's like my supervisor said, it was fine that we came over here, you know, and that even though we're
part of our outreach.
Yeah.
I'm just really sorry you never invited the other side of the building because we really could have used it.
There's still time. There's still time.
Well, I'm not there anymore. Yeah.
Like 2 years.
Actually, there's a whole new bunch of brand new people in the building too, because they brought in the low incidence outreach folks from Flint. That used to be a Michigan School for the Deaf, and they're all in the building brand new this year. So
they could sign for us.
Things, so,
yeah. Well, you know, when you sing, having people that work with the deaf is probably a good thing.
Ooh, ow. Ow.
But let me get back to Bill's point, and really, you know, I think what you're saying is that the least that a boss should do is not go against something that's cathartic,
right?
I mean, because if they had, it would have simply raised the rebellion even further. But you know, I think what you're saying though is, if someone had said you've got to do this, you wouldn't do it. And if they were too supportive, you know, you don't want to be co-opted,
right?
And you want to talk a little bit about that whole notion? I mean, if suddenly this became so embraced, would that have changed the nature of it for you, or further?
I'd meet after work hours.
I forgot what the question is, I guess. Oh, if they'd, well, we probably would have just, I would have written the songs and sent them out on email to everybody, and we would have just, you know, done it, you know, underground, I guess.
You know, I think after, as Maria talked about, after it got going, when administrators first tried to squelch it and Barb said that's not going to happen, I think, you know, the momentum of that was established and the process was established. This was done by staff. And staff organized it, and staff did everything for it. And I think, to their credit, the administrators were fine with that, and they just let it go, but they didn't try to influence it. And that's how it always went.
Anyway, so. What'd you say?
I said we did everything anyway around there. So,
you know, there never really was a question of someone either trying to stop it since that original time or trying to get too involved in it. It pretty much had its own momentum, and you're going to contradict me now.
There was one occasion real early on that I remember where it was suggested, I think by our director, that maybe we should invite the Michigan Historical Commission and the Secretary of State to come to the holiday buffet. And oh my gosh, it was like, no, I don't know if it was Barb or who said it, but it was absolutely not. This is our party, and we do not want the big cheeses in there. And I think that might be where the People's Party thing came from.
Yeah, this year I was sick the day of the party, so I really was torn. I didn't want to infect the whole center, but but I wanted to be there. Yeah.
And I have some pictures up here too. If anybody's interested in seeing, like, some of our, we dressed in costume. Eric's got a caribou outfit on.